Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is your host, Maruf Yusuf, and I have some exciting news to share with you today. Over the last 3 years, I have interviewed many entrepreneurs on this podcast, Muslims who love what they do and make a good living, and shared their stories. Many of you asked me the same question over and over. How can you also be like these successful guests? But what you may not know is that I also talked one-on-one with thousands of Muslim entrepreneurs, professionals, and seekers from all walks of life in the last 10 years. Their question was the same. How do we live our lives as Muslims with meaning and impact? Through these conversations, I have noticed patterns in what successful Muslims do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do what they do. I have taken all of these insights along with my learnings from hundreds of books and put them into a book called 7 Steps to Success in Deen and Dunya. This book is based on the Quran and Sunnah and proven business principles. It is for those Muslims who do not limit Islam only to masjids or prayers, daily salah, but see the Islam as a way of life. The book introduces a new way to live for you as a Muslim, inshallah. With a whole year to read and implement these steps, you have nothing to lose, but a lot to gain. And if for any reason you're not happy, you can get a full refund. So take action today and get the book on Amazon as a Kindle, paperback, hardcover, or audiobook on Audible, or you can also get it via the link in the show description. Don't miss out on this opportunity. Get your copy of 7 Steps to Success in Deen and Dunya. Embark on a journey of a lifetime towards a more meaningful, impactful life as a Muslim, inshallah. Now, back to the show.
Hey, assalamu alaikum. This is Maruf, your host of Muslims on Fire. Today, I have a sister, Yvonne Mafei, joining us from My Halal Kitchen. Assalamu alaikum, sister. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. We've been trying to do this for a while now. Alhamdulillah, it's happening now.
I'm sorry, I was caught up with a few things, but alhamdulillah, we are able to do this in Ramadan.
Yeah, that's a blessed time, isn't it? But this one is a bit strange, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but I think it's good. Quieter.
That's right. That's right. So, let's do this. Let's start this. Usually we start almost from the very beginning. Tell us okay. What you remember. Tell us what you remember, what you think makes you who you are, part of who you are at least, if you go back to your childhood memories.
Oh, it's so interesting because childhood tells us everything about ourselves, I think. And when we tap into those things that we really loved as a child, I think those are still the same things we love as adults, but we don't always do them. And when I was a kid, I'm an only child, so I was pretty independent, but I had a big family. So lots of love, lots of fantastic food from my Italian side and on my dad's side. And my mom's side is Puerto Rican, so I was really spoiled with great food. But my parents were really interested in all cultures, and they had ultimate respect for people from all over the world. And I grew up in a small town in Ohio.
Okay.
But it had a lot of immigrants from Greece and Italy and Poland and Slovakia and Hungary. We knew people from all over the world, and everybody was in the same boat, you know, building a life with their families. And you just sort of tasted everybody's different food at international festivals and things like that. So I grew up in, I would say, like a great environment of like a small town America, but with a big world feel. So I was dying to travel the world as a kid. I couldn't wait to escape the small town and see the world, and also to know where I was from. Like, my dad was born in Italy, and my mom had really strong roots in Puerto Rico. And I thought it was really important to understand myself by going to those places and exploring, you know, my roots. And so I started traveling really young, around 18, right out of high school, and went abroad. Yeah, my parents were so supportive of that. And I was very lucky that they pushed me out the door and taught me not to be afraid, but to be smart. And I studied in Spain while I was in college. So I was able to be fluent in Spanish and kind of see Europe. And that was interestingly what led me to Islam, because I went to Morocco as a side trip in college. And that was my first experience with Muslims and never had heard about Islam. And it was just a very exotic but interesting place for me to be there. And my first encounter with Ramadan as well was there in Morocco. So it's funny we're talking about it right now.
Interesting.
If
you track back a little bit, so you said you grew up in this small town, Ohio, and you come from international background. Let me ask you this. You said you already speak Spanish. Of course, obviously you speak English as well. Do you speak Italian and Puerto Rican as well?
It's funny you mentioned that, because you would think so, but Italian is just, it was just something that not as many people spoke. And so that was harder for me to learn. And my grandparents spoke a Sicilian dialect and mixed in with English, so it was even harder. And my mom's side, speaking Puerto Rican Spanish, was really hard to understand. They speak really, really fast. So when I went to Spain and then on to Mexico the following year, I really learned, you know, how to speak the language and understand it. And that helped me with my Italian, actually, because Italian is very similar. And it just made me feel closer to my roots, because then once you understand a language, you understand how the culture thinks. Absolutely. As well.
That's why I was asking. Yeah. Right? Because it opens, like, because I speak some languages. I know, like, when you even shift the language you speak, it affects you, right? Sometimes, like, your mood, your way of worldview.
It's fascinating. It is fascinating. And it's so much fun. And it really expands your brain muscles quite a bit.
That's right. So one of the things you mentioned, you really wanted to get out of this city. You want to see the world. Were there any other subjects you were really particularly interested in while at school?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to be really good in science and math, but they just, like, I don't know, they were just harder for me. I didn't have a lot of attention span in school. I couldn't wait to get out. I mean, I was a really good student, very diligent, but I didn't have the patience for the sciences, and I was really much more interested in geography and business. I was maybe because, you know, I grew up kind of being alongside my dad quite a bit, and he had a business mind. And so he was always encouraging me to, like, think out of the box and think for yourself and do big things. Like, he was an advocate for education, of course, but, you know, he made me want to be excited to, like, break out of the classroom and do something. And so I was antsy quite a bit as a kid, and I wanted to, you know, that day that I could, like, graduate from school, from college and everything, and then finally just go and see what I could do with the information I had and the skills and create something. He emphasized a lot on creation. And my mom, she's like an artist to me. She's got a brilliant mind, and she always made our home extremely beautiful on a low budget. And so I grew up in a world of, like, dreamers, and I wouldn't say they weren't professional artists by any means, but they just created a world that was really beautiful and aesthetically, my mom especially. And so I don't know, I think I kind of went out in the world with, like, what can I do that is interesting and beautiful and uses my brain? And as a kid, I would sit in my room and I would write books. And I always wanted to, like, have a job where I could be at home.
You said you read books or you write books?
I used to write as a kid. I used to make books. I used to write a lot. And I used to think, like, wouldn't it be cool to, like, have a job where I don't have to leave home to make a living, but I can leave whenever I want. And I don't know. It's really funny. It's like I set my mind up to have a job as a freelance writer, or, you know, something more independent and entrepreneurial. I just knew that I couldn't do the 9-to-5 and sit in a desk, even though I did out of college. I did every job I did was 9-to-5 at a desk. But I was really itching to do something that I could, where I could write and I could, and it could involve food because I knew food really well from my family and from my travels. And I really had an appreciation for it. And my dad gave me my first camera and he used to say, take pictures of everything, especially food. And this is way before food photography was ever a thing. So wow. It's really funny. It's like when these opportunities came, you know, for blogs and for Instagram, it was something that I had been doing as a kid, but you know, the apps weren't there, the opportunities weren't there. So when they came, I just knew what they were instinctively and how, like, I have to grab to this because this nature. Is my, yeah, I was ready. I was ready. I knew that that was my ticket to, you know, being a food writer and being able to travel and write about, you know, interesting places and food, because I was sort of set up in my mind already, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. So let's go back to the story now. So you're 18, you went out to travel, you mentioned Spain, you mentioned other parts of the world and Morocco, that's where you discovered Islam. So I wanted to understand that. So you are like around 18, you are discovering, you're seeing, like, how was the world? Like, was it as you expected, or were you disappointed, or you were like, wow, even better than I expected? How was it?
I can honestly tell you that I was scared. I was really young. You know, I was in my 20s. I was studying with other kids that I didn't know. I was alone in foreign countries. And back then, you didn't have WhatsApp where you could call your family free. You had phone cards. You had your credit card. You could use like a collect, you know, call number, but it was so expensive to call your family. And, you know, everything was by snail mail. I was really lonely. And those trips were very difficult for me because I missed home, but I knew that I had this amazing opportunity to see Europe, and I didn't have a lot of money, and I studied really, really hard because I wanted to master the language. So they were really tough experiences for me, but they gave me a lot of fortitude to appreciate like my opportunities back home. They pushed me to my limits to be more independent and to figure things out. Because, you know, back then you didn't have the Google Maps and all that. You had paper maps to figure out where the city center was, you know, how to get on the trains, and just fascinating. Like when I think back about it, I think, was I brave or stupid? You know,
but or somewhere in between. You never know.
Somewhere in between. But alhamdulillah, I never had any trouble. But
Childhood Questions are sponsored by Ali Huda. Ali Huda is a video on demand streaming platform for Muslim children where they can watch cartoons and shows while learning about Islam the fun way. If you are a Muslim parent, this will be one of your best investments. Visit www.alihuda.com for a 7-day free trial. Now back to the show.
But, you know, I give credit to my parents because I know they were scared, but they didn't show it to me. They showed me that they had confidence in me, that I should have confidence in myself. And those were really, really important qualities that I brought back to college and said, you know, I'm going to do something with these skills that I've gotten. Because back then I thought maybe I would do international business because of the language and the cultural experience. But I didn't want to do just business. I wanted to have more freedom. You know, I didn't want to just work. I didn't want to work for a corporation. I knew that.
Okay. So if you don't mind me asking, what were you studying?
I was a Spanish and international, undergrad, I was Spanish and Latin American studies major. And then I went to grad school at the same university, Ohio University in Athens, Ohio, beautiful place. I studied international development. I wanted to do anything international.
It's obvious.
So I focused on journalism and business and education because I knew that I could teach, I knew that I could write, and I knew I wanted to do business. So I kind of pared it down to those three focuses. And I thought, well, let me see what happens when I graduate and what I can do with those. So
how did it turn out?
It turned out great. Right out of master's, I went to California. My best friend and I followed each other. We took a road trip, one-way road trip, both to San Francisco. She went up to Palo Alto and I stayed in the East Bay. And I worked. I found a job in downtown San Francisco. And that was in the 90s when it was really easy to find a job. You could get in the car and just go because there were plenty of jobs. And I found a 9-to-5 job in a cubicle. And I took classes at night and on the weekends in journalism, in travel writing, and also teaching English as a foreign language or second language, because my idea was that I wanted to, you know, write, and I wanted to kind of like try to write for freelance for magazines like Condé Nast or National Geographic. It was a passion. It was like a side hustle. I knew that I wanted to, but I needed to prove myself, because back then you didn't have the blogs. Websites were just starting. So magazines that I queried said, oh, we have a website. Could you write an article? And so what I did was I started exploring all of San Francisco, all the restaurants I could go to. I would grab a friend at lunch and say, hey, do you want to try a Philippine restaurant? Do you want to try a Turkish restaurant? Because I was using it for my work. And then I just traveled up and down the California coast, Washington, Vancouver. I just used every weekend. You know, they say that side hustle thing. Now they talk about it so much, but that's really what I was doing. I was using my 9-to-5 to pay my bills, and whatever extra I had was to take classes and to, you know, see if I could get my name in print so that I could eventually maybe write for a magazine. So back then it was really hard to freelance. Really, really hard.
I understand. So, I mean, the pattern I'm kind of seeing looking back is that writing, travel, and food, right? Is it something like
that? Absolutely. Right? Those are the top three. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So while you were doing this, was it before Morocco, after Morocco?
It was after Morocco.
Oh, okay.
And I wasn't Muslim yet. Morocco just opened my eyes to, like, I had never met a Muslim before, and I didn't even know what Islam was. I mean, when the boat, we took a boat from Spain to Morocco, and as the boat was coming into the harbor of Tangier, I heard the Adhan. And later I realized that was the Jumma prayer, Adhan, and it was Ramadan. And that first Adhan was like really interesting and exotic to me. And then I was really curious about, so I started to see all the shoes outside of the masjid. And I'm like, I really thought I was in a Buddhist country. I didn't have any clue to like, what is this religion? What are they doing? But it's so peaceful. And in the morning I heard the Fajr Adhan. And I remember telling my roommate, I said, did you hear that? I said, that is the most beautiful thing. You know, when Allah says like, it enters your heart, it really enters your heart. I felt it like a invisible light or something, like just completely entering my heart. And from that point, I said, I don't know what this is, but I really want to understand these people and this religion a little bit more. Like it's just so beautiful. And so when I went back to college, I had, like I said, I was in international development. So there were a lot of international students in my courses, and I just started opening up to them a lot more. And a lot of them actually thought I was Arab. Like, they thought I was Lebanese or Moroccan or something, because I think Italians and Latinos have a similar look. And so
that's true.
I always say, no, I'm not, but tell me about you guys. Like, where are you from? What are you like? What is this religion thing? And like, what is this Islam thing? You guys are so interesting, and the women are, you know, I love their hijabs are so beautiful. And they started inviting me to their homes, to the masjid. And I got to try different food like Malaysian and Emirati and Palestinian. And they talked to me about everything from politics to food to religion. And I just loved that they were family people. They were very focused on their education. They didn't seem to have the distractions of a, you know, typical American college life, you know, which to me felt very uneasy and chaotic, to be honest. I was looking for peace. I really, really was.
Okay.
And I.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, let me ask a question before. I think there are two questions in my mind. The first thing is, you said so there was something they were after. They were they, so these families were different than the normal. So what was the normal, if you don't mind me asking,
Normal of
question
American?
as well? Yeah.
Well, it wasn't that it wasn't normal of American. It was just that in a college town with college kids, most people are there by themselves. Most of us college kids, we're not with our families, and you're not encouraged to get married for sure while you're in
Oh,
college.
I see.
You
I see.
know,
I see. I see.
those people,
I see.
most of them were there with their they were hu husbands and wives, couples, and their kids. And I thought, that is amazing that you can study and have your family. It was something completely
Oh, I
foreign to
see. I
me.
see.
Yeah, I just love that they were
Got
so
it.
family oriented and that they cooked real food at home instead of like takeouts and pizza. You know, it just seemed more wholesome to me, and I really loved that.
I see. Interesting. Like, I mean, one question I want to ask. So you said that when you're coming to Morocco, like before that, even just if you step back, like, were you a religious person in a way, or?
That's a good question. I didn't mention that yet. So I grew up Catholic and I went to Catholic school, and I would say that I grew up really pretty religious. My mom was very serious about the faith, and she always took me to church. My dad was more, he would go on like a major holiday, but he really wasn't about following any particular religion at the time. And so I was in church every Friday, which is interesting because it was every Friday for school.
If you are an entrepreneur with a product or service for the Muslim market, let's get in touch. We are halal.ad, a marketing agency and ad network for the ever-growing Muslim market. We can help you reach millions of Muslims to grow your business. Visit www.halal.ad for a 30-minute free consultation. Now back to the show.
Walked home saying
Okay.
the Hail Mary, had the Hail Mary statues in our home and everything. And but as I grew up, I kind of felt like religion became less of an important thing in society as a whole. I started to see that, wow, not everybody is Catholic, not everybody is practicing. And even in the Catholic Church, it just seemed like less and less people kind of cared, or I don't know, I just felt a detachment. And I went to Spain primarily because I wanted to be in a Catholic country and I wanted to see like maybe they're more religious there and I'll learn more about my religion there. So that was my, aside from learning the language, of course, but I was really happy to be so close to a big cathedral, and I really thought that I was going to like become more religious by going, but that didn't happen.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting thoughts. Okay, so you come back, you're in States right now, you are doing this, your corporate job and this side hustle thing. Tell us how it develops from there.
How my Halal Kitchen develops?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, before you get to Hell Kitchen, I guess there must be some steps, right?
Yeah.
So you are doing this now, you're doing the food
Yeah.
and re like writing thing. So how it does develop? Does it become a full-time thing along the way,
Yeah.
or where? I just want to
Yeah,
know the
so these
progress.
are, I guess these are the steps towards the My Halal Kitchen start of it. I had a fantastic year in California, exploring all the food and everything, and it was just it really set the stage for what I wanted to do as a career, but I didn't know how. And I ended up coming back to Ohio to be closer to family.
Your
Yeah,
home.
my home, to be closer to family. But I kept in touch with all my Muslim friends, and I think going back home, I had a refocus and said, this is time to like to get more serious about what, because it was really bothering me that I really liked this religion, but I had studied a little bit, but I needed to do more. So I did like a quick comparison of the Bible and the Quran, and but I had known quite a bit about Islam through friends at the time. And then I decided, I just sort of, I did some introspection. I went through some really difficult times personally, and it just made me really want to grab onto Islam as my safety blanket, like the peace I was looking for, because my personal life was really chaotic at the time. And I took the Shahada. I became Muslim with a friend of mine who was Muslim, And I didn't tell anybody in my family, but my mom kind of figured it out because she knew I had Muslim friends. And then I just, my whole demeanor changed. You know, I was a lot calmer. Family became like even more of a top priority for me, you know, being close to them. And that was all because of Islam. And then my mom asked me, you know, you can tell me if you've changed something. Like, she kind of suspected it. And she was so...
Moms always know,
they
right?
They always know. And she was so great about it because she saw the positive change and she really wanted me to have a good family life and so on. And so I told her. And then I had a teaching job at the time. I was teaching at a school, teaching Spanish. And told my boss, you know, can I pray? I want to start wearing hijab. And he was fine with it. He had been a headmaster in a school in Egypt, so he understood. Hmm. They were great. Hmm. But what happened is about a couple weeks later, I'm teaching a class of kids, seventh grade kids, and 9/11 happened, right? In the middle, you know, the morning hour. And I had just told my family that I was Muslim. Like, I just told them maybe like a week before or something. And so... you can imagine.
How was your father? How was your father's reaction before that, before 9/11?
Yeah, I skipped over that. he was not happy at all. Not at all. And to this day, he's not happy. But I think he's come to just, you know, he still wishes that I'll be Christian and, you know, revert back. But it's been a struggle ever since. I mean, he wasn't too religious himself, but...
Yeah, that's strange. Huh?
Yeah, and he became... a little bit more religious as the years went on, I think, because maybe he felt like he did something wrong to not keep me as a Christian. And my mom had the opposite reaction. She was just so different and respectful. But, you know, everybody deals. I think
sure.
It's interesting because it kind of shows like everyone's own personal issue with their own faith or whatever. Like it brought out a lot of things in our family. And it was a really difficult time. But I ended up getting married and moving to Chicago, and I was teaching an Islamic school there. So that's where sort of the idea for my Halal Kitchen came, because here I was in an Islamic school with mostly Indo-Pakistani kids and some Arab kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have left like my life behind. I have left my dreams of traveling and food behind. I have... Mm-hmm. entered a community of people that whose culture I don't really know too well. And it was really uncomfortable. I was sad and depressed a lot because I felt a little bit like I was in a different country. I kind of felt like I was out of my world. And so I began to, in order to turn it around, I just started sharing my culture with the kids, you know, like I'm Italian or I'm Puerto Rican, but I was, you know, raised in the U.S. So I had these, you know, three backgrounds that I was trying to express through, you know, educating them about the world and people. And mm-hmm. it was interesting because they wanted to eat Italian food or they wanted to try an avocado. And I was so shocked. I'm like, you kids are, you know, being raised in the U.S., I don't understand this. But what I didn't understand was that their parents were first generation and they were cooking, mm-hmm. you know, their family's food at home. And because everything was halal, they were discouraged or, you know, not eating out. This is way before halal restaurants ever really were popular, remember? And so they wanted burgers. Okay. They wanted lasagna. They wanted spaghetti and meatballs. And so I was... so incredibly shocked because I thought, oh my God, you know, this is how I can like talk to them about food and we can make everything halal. And so I started assigning projects to them where they had like different countries they had to research. And then I said, you know, as part of your project, you have to create a recipe. I don't care if that country is not Muslim, you have to halalify that recipe in that country. And the kids, I like that. To this day, I mean, this was 10, 15 years, more than 15, about 15 years ago now. Those kids still to this day message me about those projects and say, I made, you know, a recipe from Chile and it was halal. Do you remember that? And, you know, or someone did a Polish recipe that had pork and then they did it with beef or, you know, it sounded so simple, but it opened up this entire world of like possibility. And I saw how excited the kids were. And then all the questions were coming about halal and this and that. And we had this beautiful cultural exchange of, you know, everybody respecting different cultures and just learning how to embrace things in a halal way without saying, oh, they're not Muslim, their food is not halal, blah, blah, blah. It was a positive spin on everything. And so after a couple of years of teaching there, I was kind of burned out because teaching is pretty intense. And I decided to take a break. I needed a break. And when I took the break, I had picked up a book about food writing. Just, and I like to say randomly, but nothing is ever random in this world. And it was basically like a Bible of food writing. It was like how to be a food writer in this day and age. And ironically, one of my students had just talked to me about creating a blog. I was taking an Arabic class with her. And she said, well, I want you to comment on the blog. And I said, well, what is that? And I couldn't figure it out. So she came over to my house and she showed me how to work a blog. And then I looked at her and I said, oh my God, I can write on this thing and I can like do anything. I can write anything. She said, yeah, you can. And from then on out, I was like, I'm going to start my own writing, my own blog. And it was like I knew all the possibilities of you know, food writing, but the old ways. And this was a new way where you could publish yourself. Mm-hmm. So
it started as expanding your students' world, food world, but actually world is bigger than that, right? Expand the whole world.
Exactly. Exactly. I told them I was taking my classroom to the online platform to the world. And, you know, it's true. I think everybody's mother is the first one to comment. So the first post I ever made, I think, was about yogurt or something. And my mom's like, great job, honey. And wow. I didn't know that people would even care about halal. I just knew that it was a subject that I was straddling two worlds. You know, I was in between the non-Muslims and the Muslims. And there were Muslims who didn't know how to make food that was non-traditionally halal. And I could teach them. And then other people who didn't know what halal was, I could teach them. So it was like, I can win both ways and everybody learns and everybody can be more tolerant. Because remember, this was post 9/11, right?
Yeah.
And it was a scary time. And I'm not, you know, I had been called to speak to churches and mosque gatherings of non-Muslims who would come to learn about Islam. But I could only speak to so much. When it came to politics and a higher level of Islamic scholarly knowledge, that was dangerous for me because I can't speak to those topics. And I knew when I needed to stop. And I also don't feel comfortable there. And so for me, food was like that thing that said, can we all just like relax a little bit and realize like we need to eat and we come to the table, we can calm down. My paternal grandmother was that person who taught me that everybody would get very, you know, when there are big families, there's lots of chaos. And when everybody would get kind of upset or something's going on or someone's crabby or whatever, she would say, okay, everybody sit down and eat. And it worked. As soon as you start eating, everybody's like relaxed and, hey, you know, can I have some water? Oh, sure. Do you want the salad? Oh, mom, this is great. It's so delicious. You know, so I knew that food was that thing that could kind of calm, connect, neutralize the politics of the day. I didn't want to talk politics. You know, every time I went back home to my family, the 9/11 stuff was still very electrified and I didn't want to talk about it. I just wanted to enjoy with them. And then that was another issue. Like, well, we don't know what you eat. You eat halal, but what is that? So this was my way of showing them like, yeah, this is what halal is and isn't. And I'm making Sicilian food. I am making Puerto Rican food to show you. I have not to show you. I mean, it's authentic. Like I'm not giving away my culture just because I'm Muslim. We don't have to do that. And I don't want to do that. Right.
No, exactly. Yeah.
So from there, it just, you know, I just had all the energy and passion to I really wanted everybody to get along. You know, I wanted people to be happy and I wanted them to not hate us for being Muslim. And like, it came from a lot of emotion, I would say. You know, a lot of deep emotion.
So that's a very interesting origin story for my Halal Kitchen. So where did you take it from there? Like, so we're talking about right 9/11, right? Like probably 2001, 2002, this time, or a bit later?
This was around 2008 is when I started. So it was the height of the financial recession. Recession. And I knew that, you know, this was not a hobby for me. This was my chance to do something in the food world. I was obsessed with all things kitchen and culinary. I mean, I had been for forever. So I knew I needed to make it work. And I was, subhanAllah, I was in the perfect city for that. Chicago was absolutely fantastic for Middle Eastern markets, halal, this and that. So I started exploring, going to butchers, talking to them, seeing the products that were in the store, and then reaching out to food companies that were in Chicago. And and they didn't know what to do with me. They were nice enough to invite me to their headquarters, talk with their, you know, owners, go to their slaughterhouses, but they didn't know what to do with me. They saw me as a writer, but I had, you know, I had bigger ideas. And I said, you know, you have halal chicken. I have the ability to make recipes that people love with your product. So let's find a way to work together. So I had to wear many hats. You know, I had to do advertising, sales, marketing. I had to write the content, develop the recipes, do the website, do all the photography. I mean, I literally worked 16, 20 hour days sometimes for the first year or two. I was on my couch typing for days and days and days at a time. Like, I'd thrown out my back. So many things happened, but it was really the hustle and grind without knowing what hustle and grind was.
You were just doing it.
I was just doing it. See. Yeah.
So yeah, I guess you're working as you said, a copywriter or maybe content creator for some of the food companies around Chicago. Right?
I was copywriting for my own website, but I was using their products.
Got it.
So I was promoting their stuff on my platform, and that was the way they wanted it. They didn't, you know, most of the time they didn't want it on their site always. They said, you know, you have the site that people go to. So they were great to work with. I mean, I had fantastic relationships developed with these. And it was a time when everybody was trying to figure this food blog thing out and how we could all work together. So I was very lucky that they were open-minded at the time to just take a chance with me. And I know I didn't want to disappoint. And I knew their products were things that I liked, I cared about. They were good people. They did halal right. You know, there was a lot to vet as well. You have to make sure that it's not a, you know, problematic product, that it's healthy. I have a lot of standards for halal. So it's not just any halal company. There's some things I don't like, you know, some products I would never put in my mouth. But even though
they are branded as halal, is that what you're saying?
Yes, of course. Even though they're branded as halal, I still had to do my research about what made them halal. What are their ingredients? I'm a purist when it comes to food. I'm very, very strict about things being healthy, which means being natural and good for you. I don't like fake stuff. I don't like synthetics. And I've been like that since the beginning. And that's what I stuck to. And I'm happy I did that because, you know, being authentic to that created, you know, what it is today. And the audience understands who I am pretty much in that sense. And they're there because they want to learn more about that, or they agree with that, or, you know. So it's created a great community in that type of, you know, style, I guess you could say.
So, I mean, where is my Halal Kitchen today? Is it something you see that, I'm just looking at the trajectory where we started the conversation. So you started being interested in travel and and the food, right? And also writing. Mm-hmm. So your life journey took you to a lot of places. By the end, then you also take a turn, with Islam. And actually, I mean, like, it changed the whole, I mean, sometimes it things change, especially when you embrace this new lifestyle, it makes impacts, you know, on how you feel. And you were trying to cope with it, and my Halal Kitchen was the kind of product of it. So one of the things I've been experimenting at a personal level recently is that when you look at life, like, right? So I see like there are three types of people. I mean, everybody, you know, they put people in different categories. I mean, for me, there are three types of people. The first is people who don't care or who are probably not figure out what their purpose in life. Let's put it this way, okay? Mm-hmm. They are not even looking. I try to enjoy the life as it is. So some are trying to seek, but maybe they haven't found out yet, right? In seeking mode, let's put it this way.
Yes.
So the next one is that they may have found out their purpose, right? But they have not fully kind of... Let me give you an example. For example, do you remember you mentioned the moment you said your thing was writing and food, but you're working in the corporate world, right? Because at that moment, you already knew what you really want to do, right? To some level.
Right.
And you knew you're in the right place in the corporate. So you were trying to make a transition, right? Let's put it this way. So then my halal kitchen. So this is the ultimate goal, I guess, right? This is a category three where people find their purpose and follow your passion. And the last thing, which is maybe not the least, is that to make that thing as a source of living, as a source of income, so you can fully dedicate your life. So I see you one of those people in that category. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think I would say yes by now. I mean, I don't think my purpose is fully developed or realized. Sometimes I ask myself, what is the purpose? Like, am I doing the things that give purpose? I'm always asking myself that question. And I'm constantly looking to refine and tweak and really understand my purpose and, you know, like how can I fulfill it better if I understand that it's to, and not just about halal, but like opening up people to understand and appreciate real stuff, real food, nature, you know, respect, consciousness. Like, you know, I'm always asking myself, am I doing enough of that good job? And because there's still more work to do. There's so much more work to do. And I realized that when I was in Turkey recently, I really questioned myself that a lot when I was there.
That's very interesting. Yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about your recent journey to Turkey and what you were up to and what is next for My Halal Kitchen?
Yeah, so so another dream of mine was always to go international and especially into Turkey and Dubai. And I was able to visit Dubai for food conference and check out the food scene, the business scene there. That was really great and interesting. But Turkey is the place that stole my heart. When
it
I got
so many varieties. Right?
Yeah. I didn't realize, but in my vision board as a college student, I had Turkey on my vision board.
Psst. If you are an entrepreneur with a product or service for the Muslim market, let's get in touch. We are halal.ad, a marketing agency and ad network for the ever-growing Muslim market. We can help you reach millions of Muslims to grow your business. Visit www.halal.ad for a 30-minute free consultation. Now back to the show.
And before I knew anything about this, I was just intrigued by Turkey from a very young age. I didn't know why. And so I got there. So I moved there on my third trip. My third trip was an actual move. But the reason I did it was because I went through another very difficult life change. My life is constantly feels like it challenges me. And I feel like I'm constantly starting over. I feel like I'm constantly making lemonade out of lemons. And then I just like asked Allah, you know what, please just guide me, because I really don't know what's next. And I was feeling really burnt out in the business scene in Chicago. I was tired, and I was feeling like, you know, sometimes a place has an end to it. Like you've utilized everything that you could. Like I felt like my time in Chicago was done, that I had, like, it had given me so much, and I respect it, it gave me a lot, but I also had some challenging experiences there, but I was ready to move on. And when I went to Turkey, I told myself, you know, I'll just go for a few months and see if I like it. I mean, after my second trip, I spoke at a World Halal Summit conference, and then I went south after being in Istanbul. I went south and I fell in love with it because I thought it was like an Italian town, and it reminded me of Italy with all the fruits and the Mediterranean vibe. And I thought, well, this is like a Muslim place, but a little bit like Italy, and something I could kind of relate to. And so I came home and I started packing up my apartment, got rid of my car, and I went to Turkey. And I didn't tell anybody, I didn't tell too many people. I was, like I said, I had a really challenging personal experience in life, and I needed a break from everything. And so I went. I just wanted quiet, you know, I wanted quiet, and I wanted to cook. I wanted to experience the fresh food. I was so tired of packaged food. I said, if I see one more sticker on a fruit, I think I'm going to lose my mind. I really hate stickers on fruit. Or if I see more like boxes of food, this is not real food. You know, I don't know, like something inside of me was just breaking. I thought, I'm over here advocating for real food and da 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 da. And I felt like I wasn't living it to the way that I really wanted. And so going to Turkey was like my release. And I got an apartment close to, very like two blocks from the local market. Mm-hmm. And I started going to the fish market to get fresh fish. And I felt alive again. Wow. I felt alive again. I felt like this is what food should be. This is what I want life to be for myself, at least for a little while. To kind of regroup. And
You went back to the basics, huh?
Yes. No processed food. Everything was local and everything is seasonal. And then I realized how difficult it is. It's very difficult to make a recipe with pomegranates when pomegranates are not in season. You know, Costco magazine asked me to do a recipe and they wanted me to do it with pomegranates, and there were no pomegranates in the entire town. Not one.
I see. Wow.
So, because when they come on the tree, they're abundant. You can find as many as you want, but when they're out of season, and isn't that the way it was when we were kids? Isn't that the way our grandparents ate? And so here I realized, you know, I have to get a grip on the reality of what everybody faces in the US and then Western countries, not so much Europe, but that it's not as easy as we would like it to be, to eat seasonally, to eat locally, to eat organically. You are an extremely privileged person if you get to do that. So it adjusted my reality, you know, like I've been fortunate to be able to do that. So the best that I could do was to show people, okay, you know, this is what egg yolks should look like, this yellow. I wanted to create a standard so that maybe back in the States, people can demand more and demand better. But also to realize the complexity of eating locally and eating seasonally. It's not easy. It's not easy to cook like that. It's not easy to cook from scratch every day. So I needed a reality check as well. I think that was good for me to have a lot more empathy for people who can't do that. I mean, in Chicago, I mean, I was cooking all the time because I could. I don't have kids, so I wasn't a busy mom, like trying to juggle. So I really needed a reality check to kind of come more in line with, you know, the challenges that people have cooking so that I could, you know, relate to them more. But at the same time, I wanted everybody to see how beautiful something real is, right? The nature, the fruits. And that's the stuff that really engaged people, was this longing for the real cherry, you know, the beautiful non-waxed lemon, you know, things like that, the simplest things. But I think people really want that. They want that back. And maybe now with the pandemic, you know, people are cooking more at home and they're more in touch with their food than they, when you touch and you cut and you chop and you cook, you are in an intimate relationship with that food and you appreciate a lot. You smell things, you taste differently. So I feel like at this point, you know, like I'm a lot closer with my audience because of that, because of all of that.
I see. Sounds good. I mean, that's a, I mean, of course, our life is always moving on. We are still building on the stories, but I mean, that's just in itself, like so far, it's been a beautiful story. I really enjoyed it. Do you think, is there a question I should have asked, but I didn't ask? Maybe you want to ask yourself and answer that.
That's a good question. You wanted to know what was next, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I have some interesting things. So I gained a lot of insight in Turkey on regional Turkish food, like on the from the Aegean side, which most people talk about Mediterranean, but the Aegean is a beautiful, lesser known area. I mean, it is known for with tourists, but for food wise.
What is the city you said mentioned?
I was in Fethiye.
Fethiye, okay.
Fethiye. Okay, so I still have cooking classes going on. As soon as the tourism picks back up, I teach cooking classes there. So I take people to the local market. They come back home and we do Aegean style plant-based.
This is food. Physical classes. You take physical, the people in physical, not online.
Right. But I am going to start virtual classes because that's become a demand. So that's something brand new I will be doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And my next cookbook is going to be, I'm working with Dr. Medea Said. She's a holistic mom MD on social media. We are working on a book together about healing foods and foods that boost your immunity. And we started this project way before I went to Turkey, before this pandemic. And so hopefully...
Go ahead. Sorry.
So we are working on this book that's going to have information for people, like medical information about foods that boost your immunity and reduce inflammation, and they're just healing foods. And then I will be doing all the recipes for the book. So I'm really excited about that because I feel like that's exactly where I am right now in life is, you know, not just the halal, but the pure, the healthy, the foods that are nutrient dense, things from around the world, you know, little secrets, teas, you know, things that people can utilize in their cooking and, you know, drink like a nice herbal tea to relax themselves, but has lots of antioxidant. Those are the things that we're going to include in the book that I think will just be like the next step forward for me is, you know, going beyond halal.
Okay.
Halal and tayyib, you know, wholesome and pure. And, absolutely. You know, getting back to the basics, getting back to the earth. That's so important.
That sounds exciting. I wish you all the best. Tell us, Yvonne, tell us please where listeners can find you or maybe follow you on social media.
So everything is at My Halal Kitchen.
Mm-hmm. .com.
My website, myhalalkitchen.com and Instagram and Facebook. And then, if anybody's interested in my cooking classes, I post there, but I also have an Instagram called Cook in Fethiye, Fethiye. So that's about my cooking classes. If anybody wants to get to Turkey, once the air restrictions are lifted, we hope that will be soon, but not too soon for, you know, health purposes. So, you know, we just have to be optimistic,
sure,
right?
Absolutely. So. Sounds good. It's been a pleasure getting to know you. And may Allah give you success in your Mahal Kitchen.
Same to you. You have a wonderful podcast and thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored.
It's a pleasure. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.